Okay, this is chapter 6, and it's really our last fun chapter. So we need to enjoy it. And then we get into the hard stuff from this point on. So we'll have to ramp up our studying and get ready to dig in. Let's start with verse number 1 over here with Alex, and we'll just work around the room. Don't forget to say your verse number so everyone can follow along. We're going to read the whole chapter.
1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom.
2. With 3 ministers over them, one of whom was Daniel, the satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer long.
Verse 3. Now this Daniel was distinguished himself above the other supervisors and the satraps, for he had an extraordinary spirit. In fact, the king intended to appoint him over the entire kingdom.
Verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him.
5. Then these men said, "You shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless you find it in connection with the law of his God."
6. Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows. King Darius, live forever.
7. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions.
8. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked.
9. Therefore, King Darius signed the document and injunction.
10. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he did aforetime.
11. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplications before his God.
12. Then they came near and spake before the king concerning the king's decree. How dost not sign a decree that every man that shall ask a petition of any God of man within 30 days? Save of thee, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. The king answered and said, "The thing is true according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altered not."
13. And they answered and said before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles of Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or the injunction you've signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day."
14. Then the king, when he heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel, and he labored till the sun went down to rescue him.
15. Daniel went came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Now open that it is the law, a law of the Medes and Persians, that no injunction or thing that the king established can be changed."
15. Then the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you."
Pam, you want to do 17, or you got it, James?
17. And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den. And the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of his lords, that no purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel.
18. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him.
19. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste unto the den of lions.
20. And when came to the den and cried with a lamentable voice unto Daniel. And the king spake and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lion?
21. Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. 22. My God hath sent his angel, and hath shut the mouth, the lion's mouth, and they have not hurt me, for as much as before, was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt. 23. Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God.
24. And the king commanded, and they brought those men which had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions had the mastery of them, and break all their bones in pieces, or ever they came at the bottom of the den.
25. When Darius the king wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language, who were living in all the land, may your peace abound.
I make a decree that in every dominion of your kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, who is steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end.
27. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and in earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lion.
28. So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian.
All right, very good. I want to try to show you something that's unique about this chapter and some of the other ones, and I haven't brought it up to this point. It just didn't seem like an opportunity. So I'm just going to put some numbers on the board real quick to illustrate it. And then I'll show it to you. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And then it's going to go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And what we're going to do is we're going to compare and contrast the beginning of the chapter to the end like this. So let me show you what I mean. In the beginning of the chapter, Darius shows favor to Daniel. So that's in verses 1 through 3. If everyone can see that. So I'll put them here. Darius shows favor. Now look at how the chapter ends. So now this is the one that's going to correspond to the one. So now look at the end of the chapter. What is happening to Daniel?
He's prospering,
right. Mm-hmm. Now this pattern is going to work its way, this 1-1, 2-2, all through the chapter. So, for example, the next thing is the injunction in verses 4 through 9, the injunction. Now, what was the injunction? Right. Only prayer to who? And for how long?
Right.
Now, what is the number 2 going to be? Look at verses 25 through 27.
The injunction to bring David to Daniel's God.
Yeah, now we have a decree. So this is like this reverse parallelism. You guys seeing it? Now let's look at number 3. What happens in number 3? This would be verses 10 through 13. What happens in verses 10 through 3?
Daniel pleads.
Before that. So men go to the king to accuse Daniel, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now,
accusations.
What is the correspondence? So this is the men. Go to the king. Now,
judgment.
Yeah, the men, now the men are in the den of lions. This isn't a coincidence. This is obviously written like this on purpose. Let's look at number 4. Number 4 is Darius in verse 14 is what? He's distressed.
Yeah.
He can't sleep, right? Right. Now let's look at Darius again, verse 23.
He's
exceedingly glad.
Yeah. He's happy.
He's exceedingly glad. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now look at number 5. Okay. Darius orders Daniel to what? To lions. So orders to lions. And then what's number five going to be on this side?
Hold it to the end of the line.
What's that?
Y'all, this is man to be faithful to the line.
That's number four.
Mm-hmm. He's
pulled
out of
the end. Yeah, he's delivered.
Mm-hmm.
And then the center of the chapter, number six, is Darius asked Daniel if God has delivered him. That's the splitting point. Darius asked God, asked Daniel if he split him. What verse number is that?
20.
So, it's just really interesting. And you can go back and do this with chapters 1, 2, 3, 4, all the same. They're all written in this model right here, where there's an opposing thing going back and forth until like a point of climax, and then it works its way back down. So I'm pretty sure that one of the factors in this is it helped with oral retention. Because remember, how is this primarily transmitted?
Orally.
Right. So I got to remember this. I'm being told these stories. How do I remember these stories? Well, it's a pattern that goes all the way up and then all the way down. I found it pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And it's just the way it's structured. Now, those of you that did some research, what is the big issue in this chapter and the end of the last chapter? What is the big issue in this chapter and the end of the last chapter? Yeah, it's before that, Yen. That's what we're going to focus on. But the end of the chapter, who do we meet? Of last week, who do we meet?
Darius.
And then we introduce to Darius again. What's the issue with Darius?
There's no record of him.
That's correct. There is no historical record of Darius. Up to this point, there's no historical record of Darius. So this is often brought up as an argument to the fabrication of the story. Because we don't have a historical... Now, there's all kinds of theories regarding it. One of the common ones that I read was that Darius is also Cyrus. And that he has two names. That Darius is also Cyrus, and that he has two names, based on kind of like a blended family kind of a scenario. That was just one of the theories. So what does a Christian do with something like this? When we have a scenario whereby the historical records outside of the Bible cannot substantiate the biblical record. Say again?
Where faith comes in. I mean, it kind of goes back to what you're saying. Jesus confirms this himself. So do we believe in Jesus, that Daniel is true, or do we not?
Right. Now, where is it, by the way, just so we remind ourselves, where is it that Jesus validates Daniel?
The film.
You guys can remember, right?
Some adults.
It is definitely in the gospel. That is a good answer. You probably teach the Bible, don't you? Yeah. So it's in the Olivet Discourse. It's in the Olivet Discourse. So let's just run over there one more time, because repetition really helps us, and we'll get into it in the weeks to come just by having to compare the Olivet Discourse. So chapter 24, please, of Matthew. Chapter 24 of Matthew. And let's remind ourselves, somebody please tell me, why do we call it the Olivet Discourse? Right, because he's on the Mount of Olives. Very good. Right, he's on the Mount of Olives. So we call it the Olivet Discourse. And what verse are we looking for?
15.
Very good. 15. So maybe you should underline it in your Bible or something like that, so that maybe that'll help you remember. And it's not a big deal. He says, so when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel, and then we're done. That's all you need to say. Because what did Jesus call Daniel?
Prophet.
Prophet. So what is Jesus doing?
Validating.
Yeah, he's validating him. Yeah, he's validating his authenticity as Yahweh's prophet. And so we believe that Jesus knows what he's talking about. We can rely on Jesus to tell us the truth. Now, think about how problematic it is if we can't rely on Jesus?
Yeah.
Right, Charlotte, that's great. What do you mean by it's all over?
And everything is just null and void. Because we couldn't believe him. If Jesus couldn't do it, then it just makes everything null.
Yeah, null and void. Let's unpack that. That's a great description. What do we mean by null and void? What does Jesus become if we can't trust him?
A man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a man. And we're following a man. Buddhist, Hindu, Islam. We're just another group of people that are following a man. And nothing more. That's all he is. I mean, it is pivotal. It is foundational. It is essential. Either he is without sin and can be counted on to always speak truth because he is the truth, mm-hmm. or he's another man and we are part of a man-made religion. And there's nothing in between. So, the fact that we don't know who Darius is from a historical perspective, whether that is to say Cyrus or whether he's a general or whether he's a second-in-command leader, that we don't, that's really immaterial to us. Because Jesus has said that Daniel is a prophet. Okay? Paul argues all scripture is what? Right. All scripture is God-breathed. Peter will argue that holy men of God spake as they were moved by the prophet. Caleb.
From an apologetic perspective, even if they don't know who he is, there have been countless other times where they have found evidence. At one point in time, they said that this did not exist, and they found it in some archaeological dig somewhere. So just like Earth of Chaldees, for instance. So just because this one can't be validated, there's been numerous other times they have.
Yeah, there was an entire period of time where there was doubt as to the existence of King David. King David. And then all of a sudden, bam, now we found that city. And right. The Cyrus cylinder.
It wasn't found until the 1850s.
Right, exactly.
1850 years, people.
Right. Okay, so now let's get into the chapter with some discussion. And I'm going to try to make sure if you make a great point to repeat it, not because you didn't say it well, but so that the people can hear better online, that are watching online, listening afterwards. And then Art's going to find us an omnidirectional mic that we can also set up in the room to get some better audio, visual in this room.
I did hear in discussion of Darius, one of the theories that I read was that Darius was a term much like Caesar or much like Herod, even,
yep.
where it would be used as a generic name, as a more positional name.
Right, that makes really good sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I read that it Darius means like kingly or holder of the scepter. So that's what Homer said.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Darius means kingly or holder of the scepter. Okay, now let's get into the story, the narrative. What are your thoughts on it? What are the verses that stuck out at you? What are the words that need to be underlined? What are the words that need to be reread? Caleb.
Verse 3, where it talks about he had an excellent spirit or an extraordinary spirit. To the extent of verse 4, it says that they could not find any error or fault in him. The Net Bible goes so far as to say, the Net notes say that the Aramaic actually says that there was not even any negligence found in him. And for him to be 80 years old, to have such a testimony, they couldn't find fault and have such a spirit that they couldn't find something who was even negligent, is an amazing testimony to Daniel.
Yeah, it's very strong. It's incredibly powerful words. I guess it would be questionable as to whether Joseph or Daniel have a stronger testimony in the Old Testament, right? I mean, on par with each other. Can anyone think of a negative thing from a Joseph perspective? I guess maybe not being quite timely with when he shared the dreams, and maybe like.
Well,
yeah,
definitely.
Yeah.
So one of the things that stood out to me, because I read it so many times, is that
when you had the cupbearer and the baker, yeah.
Yep.
When he asked them, he interpreted their dreams. He asked them. He said, "When you guys leave, make sure you go before Pharaoh.
Yep.
Remember me."
Yep.
And that basically shows that he was putting his dependence in man. Rather than in God, trusting that in God and His perfect timing.
Well, I don't know, sister. I don't know if I'd go to... Man, I mean, you're saying that that was an example of a lack of faith?
He didn't get out right away.
No, he certainly didn't. I guess I would just suggest that, I mean, you have human responsibility.
It's okay to ask.
He just said, remember me. I don't know that the lack... I think it would be hard to imagine being in a prison and knowing that no one knows you're in that prison. Because what does the family think? Dead, right. There's no lawyer advocating on his behalf. There's no wife on the outside negotiating for him to get him out. I mean, you got to believe it would just be utterly devastating to be in a prison and no one on the outside know that you're in there and working to get you delivered. And know you're in there innocently.
And he never lost faith that the Lord would eventually get him out. Just because he asked them, they didn't remember him. It didn't mean he lost faith.
Yeah. Yeah, Daniel's a pretty amazing character, as Caleb brings to our attention. You know, an excellent spirit was found in him.
I like the way Daniel 2 in verse 10, where once he found out that this decree had been signed, he didn't, cry out or complain. He just went and prayed. And he got down in
his I think what stands out in that verse specifically is, as he had done.
As he just had done. Had you always said that.
Such a great question to you. And that was one thing that stood out to me, is he didn't go and pray more or pray less. He continued in his faithfulness, and also done. You know, if we are in that situation, am I able to say, as I've been doing previously? I don't care about that.
And to piggyback on that, the other thing that he did besides just praying, he did even during this situation, he didn't miss a beat. And he said, since every day, that's not a bit. Nothing's changed, He continues to pray like he
used to. Yeah, so he prayed, he gave thanks, he did it as he previously did, knowing the decree didn't change any of his patterns. Okay, let's go to this side. You guys are slacking a little bit. So.
I find it interesting that they couldn't find anything wrong with Daniel, but they knew how the failings of their own king would pride his fears. Injunction be established that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O King, for 30 days to be cast in the lion's den. So they couldn't find any problem with him unless they set him up.
Yep. Yeah, they certainly did.
And that's similar to Esther and Esther O'Haman, who tried to get the king to do the
thing. Yeah, he did get the king to do it, right? Yeah. Yeah, what was the language they said? They said that, verse 5, then the men said, we shall not find any ground for complaint against this Daniel unless we find it in conjunction with the law of his God.
Yep.
That's really powerful language. The only way we're going to get to him is if we interfere with his walk with the Lord, if we interfere with his obedience to the law of God. That's the only way that we're going to get there.
And then on top of that, they said all the governors said this. But
yeah.
They didn't mention Daniel wasn't part of that.
It does seem as though that they may have been motivated by that last sentence in verse number 3. It says the king planned to set him up over the whole kingdom. So previously, where was Daniel at in verse number 2?
He was one of three high officials.
Right, he was one of three. But he was getting ready to get elevated above the other two. So you can't help but to wonder, were the other two the ones that really led this entire thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
because they were getting ready to lose their spot.
You wonder how many of them there were.
Yeah, because we have 120 satraps, whatever that is. Princes? Is that what the NASB says?
Yeah.
What's the Net Bible say in that verse? Verse number one? Is that what you have, Caleb? Or, oh, you were looking at it. Okay.
King James says princes.
Princes?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Verse two says.
Verse one.
Satraps.
Satraps.
And verse two is three supervisors and satraps.
Okay.
The forces that supervisors and satraps were trying to find.
The ESV Study Bible notes says the satraps were provincial rulers responsible for security and the collection of the tribute. The three high officials oversaw their work, making sure the tribute reached the king's treasury. As one of these three, Daniel received the reward promised by Belshazzar in the previous chapter.
Part of me wonders when the men like come up with this plan, like we're going to get Daniel put in the lion's den. Like, did they not? They had to know like the reputation of him as his character, but like the reputation of how so many times before, like he's had to prove himself over and over. So like in the back of your mind, you think that they were thinking, well, let's just try and see if it works this time, because this Patterson just said this one, like he had already been delivered from the fiery furnace.
Yeah, I think one of the struggles that we, when we read it, is how many years are there between these events? That's the piece that we're not really, because he's 80 years old now. So, you know, was he 20 when he went? Was he 15? There's some argument as to how early age he was. But if you think about 20 versus 80, let's see, Brother James, are you 80 yet? 78?
No, 83.
83, right. So how much do you remember when you were 20?
Quite a bit. It's scary sometimes when I think about what I was like at 20.
But it's a lifetime ago, 60 years. I mean, it's a very long time ago. Very long time ago.
Was 80 quite an old age for that time?
It's not the same for us. Like, 80 now is like 15, like they could live forever, you know?
Not in this period of time.
Not in this period?
No. Oh, no.
There are lots of diseases and
things
like that in that period of time.
This is, right. This is 70, 80, 90 is an old age. We're not dealing with people being 200 years old. That's all done. Right. You're dealing with Abraham as being one of the final guys of that older age kind of a period of time.
Well, even on top of that is the fact that he was spared from the destruction of the previous city.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally they would wipe out everybody, but yet now he only survived, but now he's...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only thing I was saying was, with regard to what Charlotte was saying, was think about, all of us can remember, I'll give you a point of reference in this room, everyone can remember when America was united and we were praying for a nation, that every congressman and woman were on the steps of the Congress in 9/11. And that was 20 years ago. It might as well have been a lifetime ago as far as the division that presently exists. So let's say that there's a decade between these events, 8 years. How fast, what was their memory like? Did they remember God delivering this and God doing that? We feel like they should have remembered, but how much time had elapsed?
But they had quite a few axes grinding this thing, too, right?
Absolutely, Sam.
Their revenge at any point, you know, over this time, because he's upstaged with God for at it at every dominant
engine. Very true, Sam. Very true.
And that's part of human nature. But human nature, they try to ignore what happened. They ignore what happened in the past. They have it on the agenda. And the devil works that in. The whole Bible is like that.
Yep.
They would remember all the things that happened in the past. You would think they would try to do right. But they don't keep going back.
Very true. Very true.
Pastor Sean,
yes.
Can I throw something out there real quick? With that, their memory, okay, you were saying about their memory, and he was 80 years old. I don't know why, and I think I might have brought this up before. Okay, with memory, when Mary visited Elizabeth, John the Baptist, and that whole thing that happened, which was a great big deal, but then later on, John the Baptist says, yep. Are you the one, or should we look for another? So my thing is, if they're telling each other word of mouth, and that was a big deal. I mean, that was huge. Why wouldn't Mary have told, or Elizabeth told John the Baptist what had happened? All of that, because that was confirmation, was both, and the baby sleeping in the womb, and all of that. Why would he ask that question? Was it the earthly side of him saying that, you know, are you really the one? I mean, I'm over here in jail. Are you really the one? Or should we be looking for somebody else? Why didn't he, you know, why wasn't that significant to them as well?
Yeah, right. That's a great question. And what I would add to it is that John doesn't even need Mary to say that, because like I showed you guys Sunday night, those of you that were there Sunday night, John said that the reason the dove left the heavens and landed on Jesus is so that he would know that Jesus is the Christ. Okay? So now we have to deal with, what did John think the Messiah was going to do? What was John expecting the Messiah to do? And that's where the disconnect occurs. And it's not just John the Baptist. It's Peter. It's the disciples. What class? What were they looking for? Caleb, what were they looking for?
A warrior king.
A warrior king.
A warrior king. Right. So if I am the forerunner to the warrior king, and I'm in jail? Like, what's going on? Because I shouldn't be in jail right now. Where should I be? I should be rescued. Because up to this point, every miracle reinforced, this is the warrior king. He can make the blind to see. He can make the deaf to hear. He can raise the dead. Imagine fighting and your general can raise the dead. Okay? That's pretty cool. I mean, you lost the battle, and then they all come back to life, and you fight another day. I mean, you got to believe that from a military perspective, this is the man that can feed 5,000 with loaves that it never ends. So his logistics train is in his voice. He speaks things into existence. Those were all confirmations as to the validity that this is our warrior king. Which is why, whenever he starts talking death, the apostles rebuke him. Think about Peter in Matthew chapter 16, when he starts laying it out for him. And Peter says, not so, Lord.
Yep.
Right? You need some, we're going to kind of get around you, kind of reset the agenda. You obviously don't know what the agenda is. And they're going to kind of call. And what does he say? He rebukes him and says, Satan, get thee behind me. Now think about that. How strong that language is. So I think what we have to see is that even with John the Baptist having the Holy Spirit dwelling in him, it's not an antidote to doubt. Because we have the Holy Spirit living inside of us, and if we're all honest in the most transparent way, there isn't anyone in this room that doesn't struggle with doubt.
Right.
In the most transparent way, we'd all say that we have moments where we're saying, God, show us that you're real. Show me that you're real. I want to know, Lord. I'm getting closer to death. I just need to know something, God. Make yourself alive to me. Give me confidence. Those are all real things, even though we have the Holy Spirit living inside us like he did. So I think that he needed to kind of get some consolation. So what does Jesus say? He says, you see this happening. And those were all confirmations that should have just kind of given John the Baptist that one last boost of faith before he loses his head. Because, you know, that's like right around the corner for him. He's going to be beheaded. No. Great point. Thank you. All right, what else is in the chapter that you saw was interesting?
Probably that 2-3. I know the first one in verse 6 is all against Daniel, but then again, when you go to 26, it's like everybody in my kingdom shall worship the Lord God.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we showed on the chart here. The flip-flop is just incredible. The one injunction versus the other decree. It's a 180-degree turn.
Like Nebuchadnezzar here.
Right. Yeah.
I think the thing that got to me was that we as Christians need to know or be able to discern the difference between flattery and complimentary. Compare verses 6 with 21. They both say the same thing, but their motives were different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, sure. That's excellent. Great point. So James is saying, look at verse 6. In which we hear, O King Darius, mm-hmm. live forever. Mm-hmm. And then look at verse number 21, in which we hear, O King Darius, live forever. And yet, they mean something remarkably different.
Yes.
Remarkably different. What does this say about Daniel's character, work ethic, integrity, that an unsaved man is so concerned about his personal well-being? What a testimony. What an incredible testimony. The language in the text is that he lost sleep, right?
Exactly.
What verse number is that? Verse 18, right?
Yeah.
Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, and sleep fled from him. At the break of day, the king arose and went in with haste to the den of lions. And he came near the den where Daniel was, and he cried out in a tone of anguish. What does it say about the character of Daniel, where the king, the sovereign king of the most powerful nation in the world, is concerned? Did you make it through the night? Mm-hmm. It's strong.
There's also Nebuchadnezzar's proclamation. You know, went out through all through the land, and he was considered the king of everything at the time.
Right.
And Nebuchadnezzar said what he did, and you know, he also gave credit to God. You know, that there is a prior statement that he already has known it. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
And part of that was, I think, Darius was disgusted with himself, because in verse 14, he said about, he realized he made a mistake and signed that decree, and he's trying to rescue Daniel. So he's kind of upset with himself, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he labored till the sun went down to rescue him.
But the fact that he actually ran with haste to see if Daniel was alive shows that he had some hope there was a chance that Daniel would be alive.
Sure, look at the question he asked. O Daniel, servant of the living God.
Yes.
Wow, the living God. I mean, this is a pagan. Has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? It's such a powerful story.
Confident expectation of a positive outcome. That's the translation of hope.
Yeah.
He had that confident expectation.
So inside this pastor, I was thinking that from a leadership perspective, you know, they confronted us, if you cannot change this rule, you cannot change this law. But after Daniel was taken out, it would seem to indicate he did.
Mm-hmm.
Or else Daniel would be right back in the lion's den the next day.
Sure. Yeah, very, very true. Yep.
So it seems like Nebuchadnezzar had complete control, because he was like, oh, you're going to die right now. You know what I mean? But it sounds like Darius didn't have as much power, because it sounds like there are certain rules about the decrees. Like they said, certain decrees need to be firm, and even the king cannot change anything.
Well, the Babylonian laws were different than the laws of the Medes
and
Persians.
Yeah, and they sound a little bit more restrictive of the king's power. And right. He even tried to look for a loophole, it sounds like. When he said, he tried to deliver him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'm thinking like a loophole on the decree, like maybe if he didn't pray at midnight, then maybe he doesn't count, or if he prayed at midnight, I mean, there was something small, probably. But it just seems to me that his power is very limited, and he was duped into putting together something that the way they presented to him, oh, they're going to worship you and work on his vanity, you know? Like, oh, yeah, okay, worship me, I got no problem with that.
You know? So. I saw a lot of parallels with Esther. I think you brought that up already, but just the fact that when the king commanded that the men be brought and cast into the lions, and but that was intended for Daniel, but yet they're the ones who killed, and that sounds just like Haman built the gallows for Mordecai, and then he ends up being, you know, killed on the gallows. And also the decree that Cyrus made in Esther that was, you know, you can't change this. You know, all the Jews are going to be killed because you made that decree that all the Jews would be killed. So he found the loophole with to give the Jews the capability to defend themselves.
So on that note, my question is, where it says the children and the wives were also pushed from that, were eaten. Is it because they don't want any uprisings because they'll remember what happened to them?
Judges. Answer?
No, that's what I think. I think he killed the wives and children too, so that there wouldn't be an uprising.
Yeah.
If you think about it, in a sense, they have told him that, hey, you can't change this. But if you kill everybody, he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
I think it was a pretty common ancient practice to punish a whole family rather than just
man. Sure.
Yeah, because would those men be the only ones that knew about that decree, or would that be kind of like a public thing? Because then you'd have like an entire nation or whatnot.
Well, it had to be a public thing because it was like anybody that worshipped anybody other than king was supposed to be thrown in a den of lions, so they had to make that public.
Yeah, well, why for 30 days though? Why 30 days? Why not make it for forever? You know? It was a permanent decree. Why 30 days?
Maybe he wouldn't go for it if it was forever.
The king?
Yes.
Isn't that more power?
Maybe they knew it.
More reliance? The people more reliance on him? They're more dependent on him? Well, that's really what the decree shows.
But
that's
he, really he probably only one target. He probably understood
yes.
that.
Yes.
He understood that people were going to worship their gods, you know, the leading gods. So
look at verse 21 with Daniel's response. And Daniel said to the king, O live forever. My God sent his angel and set this lion's mouth, and they have not harmed me because I was found blameless before him. And also before you, O king, I've done no harm. It's really hard to get away from the degree to which the Israelites connected holy living to the favor of God. Why is he saying that he was delivered?
Because he was doing right.
Yeah, because he was without sin. Blameless. That's the reason he was delivered. And he sees that as a clear relationship.
And there's a contrast, too. If you look at verse 4, and compare that with verse 22. Verse 4 saying, inasmuch as he, Daniel, was faithful and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. And then 22 we go in as, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him. And also towards you, O king, I have committed no crime before him being his God.
Is it possible that it is the angel of the Lord as well?
Mm-hmm. Is it possible, of course, that when you word it like
no,
that...
Well, no, what, out of my notes, Nelson says that actually it could have been a free incarnate Christ.
and something unique about his angel and not just a angel.
Mm-hmm.
Or the angel of the Lord.
And which verse is that?
I'm having
22, yeah. Okay, so.
Something unique about his.
Yep, right.
Mm-hmm. One of my commentaries refers to this as an example of obedience, disobedience. And it's kind of like, you know, you talk about how we are citizens of heaven first. And that we need to, we're going to be given probably in our lifetime the, you know, a situation where we have to
obey God rather than man.
Yep.
Yeah, that's coming. There's no doubt. Acts chapter 4, right? That's what we're talking about, that type of challenge.
John MacArthur had to do it last year.
Sure. Yep. And he lost some friends over it in the Christian community.
Yeah.
In the Christian community. Keeping his church open.
Oh.
Yep. So in this situation, everything works out for Daniel, doesn't it? It all works out. It's like a wonderful story. So let's go over to Hebrews 11 as we kind of wrap it up, because Daniel's situation is mentioned in verse 33. But we need to see the other side of the coin as well. Because we kind of get this impression that if I live a holy life and I obey God rather than man, then this is kind of what I can expect as the outcome. And if you look at chapter 11 of Hebrews, and we can start around, say, verse 32, 33, somewhere around there. You know, you get this list of people in verse number 32. Then verse 33, is everyone there? You get who through faith conquered kingdoms, enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of sword, were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put armies to flight, women received back their dead by resurrection. And that's amazing, right? And then look at the turn. And the turn is such a harsh turn. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release so they might rise again to a better life. Others suffered mockings, flogging, even chains, imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. All right, if you're cut in two, that means God didn't come and rescue you that day. I mean, the story of Daniel is a story of God rescuing Daniel. Nothing happened to him. He had a great night in a den of lions. Not so much for the mockings, flogging, chains, imprisonment, stoned, sawn in two, killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and in caves of the earth. I just wanted to show you the stark contrast. Both groups are servants of the Lord. Both groups are commended for having their incredible faith. And yet look at the difference of outcome. I mean, I want to be Daniel.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't get a bite that night, gets pulled out of the pit, gets elevated to a position of prominence, life gets even better for him.
His enemies are all killed.
Right, exactly. That's a great story. But what did Jesus tell the disciples? I'm thinking about maybe it's Matthew 10. I'm trying to remember where it's at. Maybe Matthew 13. He gave them some really stark words.
If you follow me, you're going to be...
Yeah, Matthew 10:19. Matthew 10:19. As just one example. Mm-hmm.
Someone read verse 16 forward and nice and loud so they can hear at home.
Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. So be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues. And you will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say. For what you are to say will be given you in that hour. For it is not you that speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and the children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they malign those of his household?
That's great. I mean, just, is that not enough for you tonight? My soul. Now come follow Jesus. Really?
Hey, there's a Roman coin. Not a Roman coin. It showed an ox. And the ox is looking at two things. It's looking at an altar. It's looking at a plow.
The ox is looking at a plow and an altar.
Right. And the inscription is ready for either. Ready for either.
Ready for either. An altar or a plow.
Yeah.
Wow. That is really powerful. I'd love to see that picture if you can Google it and find it. That is very... The ox is ready for the plow, so to work for his master, or the ox is ready for the altar to give his life for the master. What a description. If you look at what Jesus laid out for us in here, it is incredible. And you do know that the disciples lived this. When he says in verse number 23, they will persecute you in one town, flee to the next, for truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. What is he talking about there? I don't think so. I think he's talking about the Son of Man coming in 70 AD to judge Israel. What happens in 70 AD? Jerusalem is destroyed. They are judged. Who is it that judges them? I'm absolutely convinced it's Christ. Christ comes in the clouds and judges them. For what? For crucifying them. For crucifying them. He says the same thing in Matthew 24. If you look in the beginning of Matthew 24, he says, this generation shall not pass away until these things happen. Help me find out where it talks about this generation will not pass away. It's in this chapter. What number?
34.
Yeah. He says, truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. In other words, what I'm suggesting to you is that there is a clear dual application. A dual application. That the Olivet Discourse, and we'll get into this into Daniel, because we have to get into this, where he tells the disciples, this is what you're going to see. He wasn't telling the disciples 2,500 years from now. He was looking at Peter, James, Matthew. And he was telling them, when you see this, when you see the abomination of desolation. Well, they saw it. They saw the temple get ransacked. They knew that in 70 AD, the Jewish temple was totally what's the word I want to use? Yeah, but before that, what, pigs were sacrificed in there. Desecrated, right. Thanks, Dave. Desecrated, right. They saw that. And he tells them, when you see this, run for the hills. Flee for the mountains. You need to, that wasn't spiritual. The Romans are going to utterly destroy Jerusalem. How are you going to get saved? Get out of here. Get out of here before the occupation force comes in. And so what I'm saying is that the judgment that the Romans rendered was a sovereign judgment from God, and the Romans were merely doing what God had ordained for them to do as his instrument of warfare onto the Israelites. And so, in
did he have to do that as well when he said it? And I don't know.
Yes, right. So it was again that dual application. He was talking about his body, but he was also talking about this destruction of this physical temple. When you look at the language, they will deliver you over to the courts and flog you in their synagogues. You will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake. How many of you have read in here Fox's Book of Martyrs? How many of you all read? Okay, this is Fox's Book of Martyrs right here. Mm-hmm. This is Fox's Book of Martyrs. You know, all the apostles, to our knowledge, except for John, were crucified, beheaded, mm-hmm. except for John. Mm-hmm. All of them.
Mm-hmm.
The historical record is that Peter was crucified how?
Upside down.
Right, upside down, because he didn't think he was worthy to be crucified in the same way his Lord was. So Jesus is giving fair warning to all these apostles. It's not going to turn out like it did for Daniel.
Nope.
For you. No. And then the we have like 1 minute left. The language that I really didn't emphasize enough, I'm going to quickly run back to Hebrews 11. Was verse 34, they quenched the power of fire, they escaped the edge of the sword. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release. And then look at this language. So that they might rise again to a better life. So that they might, that's what they were living for. They were living for the resurrection. They had full confidence that they were going to be resurrected to what? A better life. A better life. And that's what we have to get our eyes on. That's the only thing that's going to prepare us for the persecution that's coming to America. And I'm not some conspiracy theorist by any means. No one would ever accuse me of being a conspiracy theorist. Caleb?
The Fox Book of Martyrs is free online PDF.
The Fox's Book of Martyrs is free online through a PDF. Yeah. But the handwriting's on the wall. America is becoming a pagan nation. Right. And with the degree to which they know what we put on social media, what we buy on Amazon, the websites that we go to, there will be no hiding as a Christian. What'd you say?
Marked.
Right. I promise you, the algorithms have already been written on how to find Christians. Anybody who's on social media or using a smartphone in any regard, they know who's downloaded a Bible on their smartphone. They know who listens to Christian conservative podcasts. They know who listens to YouTube videos that are Christian-oriented. Oh, what's that? It's the reality, isn't it? It'll be used against us. Yeah. We have to be prepared to be a Daniel.
It doesn't have to be scary as long as we know what our ultimate is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, it's 7:40. You need to go get your youngins if they're in Iwana.